Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the Winter Weather Watch. The state is invalidating ISTEP scores for an entire school in Gary. Brandon Smith reports on Governor Eric Holcomb's State of the State address. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Anthony Swinger of the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Areas of Northwest Indiana could see up to a foot of snow by Sunday night as lake effect snow is expected to pile up on top of an approaching weather system. Mark Ratzer of the National Weather Service's Romeoville office said, beginning at 7 p.m. Friday, a snow system will move into northwest Indiana from the northwest with the potential for heavier snow late Friday night into Saturday morning. By Saturday afternoon, northwest Indiana could see 3 to 7 inches of snow. Ratzer goes on to say that it looks like there could be a window of time Saturday afternoon where snowfall briefly ceases. However, lake effect will bring it back in force. Starting Saturday evening, lake effect snow will continue until late Sunday. The Times reports in northern Lake County, such as Gary, will see most of the snow accumulation, and the region as a whole could see as much as an additional 2 to 4 inches. By the end of Sunday, northwest Indiana could see an accumulation of 5 to 11 inches with up to 12 inches in Lake County near the lakefront. Adding to northwest Indiana's weekend winter wonderland will be strong wind gusts between Saturday afternoon and single-digit wind chills Sunday evening into Monday. Drivers are warned not only of the dangers of travel, but also of diligent tow trucks. On Friday, Indiana State Police will begin clearing abandoned vehicles from I-65 and the Borman Expressway in preparation for an approaching weather system. The vehicles will be towed to reduce the risk to other drivers and make way for snow plows. Major highway systems in the Lowell, Indiana Police District's 7-county coverage area will be given priority. Porter County Sheriff's Office also reminded residents of the parking after snowfall ordinance in a news release, stating that if 2 or more inches of snow is expected, vehicles must be removed from the roadway. Failure to remove a vehicle parked on the road could result in the vehicle being towed and a fine of up to $50. Indiana State Police urged drivers to have a full tank of gas, plenty of windshield wiper fluid, blankets, an ice scraper, water, and a fully charged cell phone when traveling. In inclement weather, police said drivers should reduce their speed, take extra time to get to destinations, and to ensure there's plenty of space between them and the vehicle ahead of them on the road. For more information on weather conditions, individuals can call the Indiana Department of Transportation at 800-261-7623. People can also contact the Indiana State Police Lowell Post at 219-696-6242 for assistance in locating a vehicle that has been towed. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. A federal court jury found a Maryville woman was guilty for using funds from the city of Gary to buy more than 1,000 pieces of computer equipment that she later resold. Monique Bowling Boyd, once head of the city of Gary's IT services, was convicted Wednesday for buying more than 1,000 iPads and other computer equipment and reselling it. A federal jury delivered its verdict after deliberating less than 2 hours. Judge Philip Simon set sentencing for April 26. The defense wanted the jury to think that someone else used Bowling Boyd's email to communicate with vendors and make the purchases. Bowling Boyd still faces trial on unrelated charges that she participated in a scheme to cash pension checks from a dead man and used the deceased's ID card to cash or deposit the checks. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. The Lake County Commissioners have defeated a new ordinance that would have enlarged areas where guns cannot be fired. The commissioners on Wednesday voted 3-0 to defeat the ordinance that would have banned gunfire within 700 feet of homes in unincorporated areas. It's currently banned within 300 feet of homes in unincorporated areas. The Times reports a crowd of gun owners applauded when the vote was announced. About 100 people packed the meeting room to express displeasure over the restrictions. Several members of the crowd said the broader restriction was unfair to residents who previously had the freedom to safely target practice on properties of 5 or more acres. The Lake County Council voted 5-2 on January 8th to broaden the restriction. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. A Northwest Indiana woman who alleged she was wrongfully jailed for nearly 2 months in a case of mistaken identity has reached a $6,000 settlement in the case. The Post Tribune reports court records show that Gloria J. Blue of Gary also will get attorney's fees as part of this month's settlement. Blue sued the Porter County Sheriff's Office and others in September in federal court. She alleged she was charged with felony drug dealing and jailed after a confidential informant falsely told a county police officer that she delivered cocaine. Blue says she regularly told jail officials that they had the wrong person, but was ignored. Authorities in March reviewed evidence, including video footage of drug deals, and concluded Blue was not in fact involved. Charges against her were dismissed. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Panties, bras, and other shoplifted items were tossed from a car being chased by police at speeds nearly reaching 100 miles an hour in Northwest Indiana. The Times reports that the driver almost struck other vehicles Wednesday evening before her car tires were shredded by spikes laid across a roadway by police. Four bras, 14 pairs of panties, two candles, and some air freshener refills, all valued at about $445, are believed to have been stolen from a retail store in Portage. The chase started when officers investigating the shoplifting approached the woman about 6:30 p.m. She was arrested when her car was stopped in Chesterton. The woman faces charges including fleeing and resisting law enforcement, theft, and reckless driving. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Indiana voters wouldn't decide anymore who serves as the state's school superintendent under a proposal being pushed by legislative Republicans. The House Education Committee voted 10-1 Wednesday to endorse changing the superintendent position to one appointed by the governor, effective 2021. The bill moves up the change by 4 years as the Republican-dominated legislature passed a law in 2017, making it an appointed position starting in 2025 after numerous policy disagreements with former Democratic superintendent Glenda Ritz. Supporters say moving up the appointment date makes sense since current Republican superintendent Jennifer McCormick announced in October that she wouldn't seek re-election in 2020, citing conflicts with the state's education governance system. Opponents of the change argue it wrongly takes a choice away from the voters. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Indiana's Secretary of State, Auditor, and Treasurer were sworn into office Monday. All three women won re-election bids in November. Secretary of State Connie Lawson has served in the position since March 2012. Auditor Tara Klutz was appointed to the position in 2017 after Suzanne Crouch was elected Lieutenant Governor. And Kelly Mitchell was sworn in for her second term as State Treasurer. Governor Eric Holcomb praised the hard work of all three officials before they were sworn in.
With this trifecta's foundation to build on, I cannot wait to see what the coming years, the coming 4 years, yields for our state, and most importantly, for the Hoosiers that we all serve.
Democrats have not held any of the three offices since 1994. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The state is invalidating ISEP scores for an entire school in Gary. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, education officials are calling it one of the biggest cheating cases involving teachers.
The ISTEP test vendor Pearson flagged some unusual data from the Frankie McCullough Academy for Girls in Gary in 2017. That prompted an investigation by the State Department of Education, and spokesperson Adam Baker says they found clear evidence of cheating.
We discovered that it was blatant cheating that had happened.
Baker says changed test answers, multi-day testing windows, and unrealistic test completion times made the cheating obvious. The investigation led to the suspension of licenses for several educators at the school, including the test coordinator and the principal. The department also invalidated the entire school's ISTEP scores for 2017. The district was not available for comment. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
All four leaders of Indiana's legislative caucuses, Republicans and Democrats, say they support Governor Eric Holcomb's plan to free up money for teacher salary increases. Holcomb's proposal, included in his State of the State address Tuesday night, would use surplus dollars to fully fund a teacher pension fund. That's projected to save schools $70 million a year, which the governor says he wants them to spend on boosting teacher pay. But Holcomb's plan wouldn't mandate how schools spend their savings. And Senate GOP leader Roderick Brace says that strikes an important balance.
We need to be really careful about invading the province of the elected school boards. We decide how much money goes to the school systems, but they decide how that money is delineated amongst the administration, amongst the teachers, and the other costs that they have.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Chief Justice Loretta Rush hailed better service for what she calls court, quote, customers during her annual State of the Judiciary address Wednesday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on work Rush says the state court system and its partners have done to improve.
Rush's focus on court customers includes efforts to address the substance abuse epidemic, continually improve court technology, and target criminal justice reform measures. An example of the latter, Rush says, is legal aid services for low-income Hoosiers who can't get a lawyer.
Justice only for those customers who can afford it is not justice for all. In fact, it's not justice at all.
Rush says a recent survey shows 80% of low-income households who were in civil court last year lacked legal counsel. She wants the legislature to increase legal services funding by $1 million in the new budget. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The U.S. Supreme Court could take on an Indiana legal dispute over who should have access to Lake Michigan's shoreline. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, the state of Indiana and a community group both filed briefs on Friday urging the court not to hear the case.
In 2012, Bobby and Donald Gunderson filed suit against the town of Long Beach for allowing the public to use their property, which they said extended to the water's edge. But last year, the Indiana Supreme Court disagreed and said their property only came to where the high water mark usually hits the beach. Patricia Sharkey is the lawyer representing one of the defendants in the case, the Long Beach Community Alliance. She says now that small cottages along the lake have been replaced by million-dollar homes, some of those homeowners feel entitled to the shore.
There's a whole community of members of the public and residents using those beaches for generations.
The state says now that the Gundersons no longer own the property, the Supreme Court doesn't have jurisdiction in the case. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Nearly two-thirds of Indiana's high schoolers earn college credit before they graduate. And Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports the Commission for Higher Education sees it as a key step toward closing achievement gaps for low-income and minority students.
The rate of students earning college credit in high school increased by 15 percentage points over the past 4 years, according to the commission's data. Spokesperson Kate Stewart says that could save the state millions because college courses cost more than dual credit high school classes.
When students are utilizing dual credit in high school, the difference will save the state all of that $62 million annually.
The report also shows low-income students make up about one-third of all dual-credit earners, and dual-credit courses increase the likelihood for students to graduate from college on time. The commission plans to share data looking at the transferability of credits in the next year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Current state statute does not allow 12 and 13-year-olds charged with attempted murder to be sent to adult court. On Wednesday, Indiana lawmakers introduced a bill that would change that. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Carter Barrett has more.
The bill was filed in part as a response to last year's shooting at Noblesville West Middle School. In November, the 13-year-old charged with attempted murder could not be waived to adult court. He could be released from a juvenile facility at age 18 or possibly sooner. This bill would essentially allow for harsher sentences in cases like these. Teacher Jason Seaman, who tackled the shooter and was shot 3 times, testified in support of the bill. He says justice was not served.
My pain and suffering will withstand long before the person who shot me will have his freedom and his abilities to be out in public again.
Some who oppose the bill say children can be rehabilitated and should stay in the juvenile system. The bill includes an amendment that would prevent released juveniles from buying a gun until they are at least 26 years old. For IPBS, I'm Carter Barrett.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link.
House lawmakers easily advanced a bill out of committee Tuesday that would make changes at the Indiana Department of Child Services. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the bill stems from recommendations by an independent investigation of the agency last year.
Some of the changes involve initial assessments performed by DCS caseworkers after a report of a child in imminent danger. Those workers would now have more time to finish the assessment, 45 days instead of 30. Bill author Greg Stuerwald says they'd also have longer to begin, 2 hours instead of one. He says the one-hour standard was setting up DCS workers to fail.
Please bear in mind that the worst of these cases, police are going to be there before. They're going to be called. They're going to have an emergency run. They're going to be there. So it's not like somebody's left hanging.
The legislation also allows foster care services until someone is 21 years old instead of a cutoff at age 18. And it eliminates poverty as a reason why a child can be removed from a home. The bill passed unanimously and now heads to the House floor. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana House Republicans denied an effort Thursday to compel the Department of Children's Services to meet legally defined caseload standards. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the rebuffed attempt from Democrats came out of a recent state Supreme Court decision.
State law establishes how many cases on average DCS workers should have at one time, and a new bill alters those numbers a bit to help the embattled agency better comply. But a Supreme Court decision says the standards are unenforceable. Democratic Representative Ryan Hatfield's proposed amendment takes guidance from that court decision. Hatfield's proposal would compel DCS to hire more caseworkers if caseload limits aren't met.
We need to ensure that our case managers are not overburdened.
Republican Representative Dave Frizzell says state oversight commissions are already keeping a close eye on the caseload standards.
And I can make a promise that we'll continue to do so.
Republicans defeated Hatfield's amendment along party lines. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Some lawmakers want to keep state money out of schools with openly discriminatory policies. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports, controversy over Roncalli High School putting an employee on administrative leave because of her marriage to a woman sparked the proposal.
Roncalli High School received nearly $1.5 million in state money through vouchers last year. But Senator J.D. Ford says schools that discriminate against staff or students should be blocked from those dollars. He says he wants to ensure the situation with Roncalli guidance counselor Shelley Fitzgerald stays one of a kind.
And if this situation is happening to her, I think that's one too many in our state.
Ford is the state's first openly gay state senator, but he's not the only lawmaker taking aim at discrimination in voucher schools. Representative Dan Forrestal, a Roncalli alumnus, says he'll likely propose changes to an existing bill later on in order to hear the measure in the House. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana lawmakers are supporting efforts to make township governments more transparent. No one spoke out in opposition to House Bill 1177 at the State House Wednesday. It would require each township to prepare a capital improvement plan for 3 years if their capital budget is more than 1.5 times the township's annual budget. Indiana Township governments oversee the maintenance of cemeteries, relief for struggling residents, and volunteer fire departments. Oftentimes, rural townships have to save large amounts of money to purchase necessary equipment, most commonly fire engines. Debbie Driscoll is the executive director of the Indiana Township Association. She says even though taxpayers might see large surpluses, townships only draw revenue from taxes twice per year.
In all of our research, they are using a December 31 cash balance, which includes 6 months of operations going forward.
A series of amendments, including one that loosens spending restrictions, are expected to be added to the bill before it reaches the full House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A bill that would require pregnant mothers go through verbal substance use screenings was approved Wednesday by a House committee. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports it also establishes a pilot program to address Indiana's high infant mortality rates.
Indiana has one of the highest infant mortality rates in the country. The Indiana State Department of Health, or ISDH, has identified drug use as a factor. This new legislation would require providers administer a verbal screen for drug, alcohol, and tobacco use to pregnant women. IU Health Dr. Mary Abernathy says pregnancy can be a motivation for recovery.
The issue that is that as OB providers, we can't offer help or treat women if we don't know about it.
ISDH Commissioner Christina Box says the bill would also establish a 13-county pilot program that uses obstetrics navigators or community health workers to reach vulnerable women
and connect them to care and deliver care closer to home in some of our rural areas with limited access to care.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb has listed the issue in his priorities. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Across the United States, an alarming number of women can die during pregnancy or childbirth. And for each one who dies, dozens wind up with health problems that can last for years. Now women are being encouraged to watch what's happening in the fourth trimester. Side Effects Public Media's Lauren Bavis has the story of one mother's long struggle to get healthy.
After a traumatic delivery, an emergency C-section, Melody Lynch Kimmery had to spend a week in the hospital. She went home thinking her delivery complications were resolved. About 3 months later, she started to feel pain in her lower abdomen.
Just randomly one day, I started to have a lot of burning, just a lot of cramping, a lot of pain around my scar area.
That was more than 2 years ago. But the 39-year-old is still feeling the effects of her delivery. Every few weeks, she travels from Bloomington, where she's a student advisor at Indiana University, to see a physical therapist in Indianapolis.
We'll go ahead and lie down, and we'll just kind of we'll do some of the soft tissue stuff first, and then we'll, like I said, we'll head upstairs and we'll exercise a little bit.
Camille Fenwick starts the appointment massaging the 6-inch scar across Lynch Kimmery's lower abdomen. It's from the C-section and is now surrounded by scar tissue.
So I'm kind of going across that scar and kind of getting those little muscles kind of around it to kind of help it to loosen up a little bit.
Fenwick describes the scar tissue like shrink wrap. It binds to the tissue underneath, which causes pain when moving.
I'm kind of feeling for like any little stuck kind of places, or check and see as far as pain, you know, that she may have while I'm doing it.
Chronic pain is just one of the health problems women struggle with after giving birth. Serious health issues can come from complications like high blood pressure and diabetes.
Both of these conditions are associated with basically a doubling in their lifelong risk for cardiovascular disease.
That's Dr. Lisa Ollier. She's president of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. She says some healthy women develop high blood pressure and diabetes during pregnancy. Most of the time, these complications clear up after delivery. But research shows those women have higher risks of heart disease, diabetes, and stroke, even after they give birth.
What we're seeing is that pregnancy can act as sort of a natural stress test.
These women also face mental health risks.
some situations, like having a preterm birth or a baby who goes to the neonatal intensive care unit, are also associated with a mom developing postpartum depression.
The problem is, not all women seek medical care after delivery. Women are told to see their doctor between 6 and 12 weeks after having a baby. But 20 to 40% of women don't go to that appointment.
We really believe that to best optimize the health of women, the postpartum care should really be a process, not a visit.
Now, the College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists wants women to get postpartum care sooner. New recommendations suggest women see their doctor 3 weeks after giving birth, or even earlier.
Women with high blood pressure, for example, are often seen within the first 5 to 7 days after the delivery.
And experts say postpartum care should continue long after that doctor's visit. They call it the fourth trimester. Susan Groth is a professor at the University of Rochester in New York. She's studying whether pregnancy can have an even longer impact. The study will follow healthy women 3 years after delivery.
Does pregnancy make a difference in their health, or is that really just this incident that happens and then everybody goes back to normal?
Getting back to normal isn't easy for all new moms. Lynch Kimmery isn't sure how long she'll need therapy for the scar tissue pain from the birth of her daughter, Sawyer.
I'd love to be free of it. I'd love to not have to worry about it.
For now, she's making the best of a health problem she never anticipated. I'm Lauren Bavis, Side Effects Public Media.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Anthony Swinger.
It turns out that a state utility consumer advocacy office is saying that there may have been some mistakes that the utility regulators made when they went ahead and approved a $20 million sale of the City of Lake Station's water system to a huge nationwide, but within Indiana, certainly huge water utility. And to find out more about that, let's turn to Anthony Swinger. He works in the Office of Utility Consumer Counselor in Indianapolis. And Anthony, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be on, Chris. Thank you.
Little history first. How did the City of Lake Station, as far as you all know, got into this point that they needed to sell their water utility plant, in particular the filtration plant and all the components that go to it, and how Indiana American Water Company got involved in all this?
Well, I can kind of speak to it from a broader standpoint, Chris. The general policies that the State House has been promoting that have been coming out of the General Assembly in the last few years have supported greater regionalization among water resources throughout the state. And one of the new laws that's passed makes it easier for a large investor-owned utility, a water utility specifically, mm-hmm. to buy the assets of a small municipal water utility. That in and of itself is not a bad thing. When you talk about acquisitions and when you talk about mergers, there can be a lot of benefits there. The customers of the smaller community benefit from the technical expertise and resources of being managed by the larger company. The customers of the larger company benefit from bigger economies of scale. You have a bigger customer base over which you can spread the costs. So the acquisitions themselves are not the concern. The concern in this particular case is the request by the utility to include a portion of the purchase that goes toward an asset that's not going to be used by the customers of Indiana American Water. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, Chris, it's about a $20 million price tag. And what we recommended specifically before the Utility Regulatory Commission was that between $7 and $8 million of that $20 million price tag be disallowed, mm-hmm. Specifically because that was the portion to pay for a treatment plant that won't be necessary with, you know, Indiana American serving its Northwest Indiana customers with Lake Michigan water. The used and useful standard is one of those basic benchmarks in utility regulation that's been around a long time. It's been on the books in Indiana for decades. And it's really nationwide one of the key principles of utility regulation. If ratepayers are going to pay for a certain asset, whether it's a water treatment plant or a power plant or a new set of natural gas distribution lines, the utility has to demonstrate that the customers or the customer base overall will use those assets and that they will be useful to the company in providing water or gas or electricity to the customers. And in this particular case, the treatment plant in Lake Station did not meet that standard in our view. And as a result, we have an appeal pending before the Indiana Court of Appeals. This was a case that the IURC decided on a 3-2 vote. Split decisions out of the Regulatory Commission are very rare. So it's a pretty unique case in a lot of ways, and we've made our arguments to the Indiana Court of Appeals. Lake Station and Indiana American have until the 28th to file their brief in the case, and then we have until mid-February to file our reply with the court. So that's where things stand at this point.
So it looks like that once all the papers are filed, all the appeals are filed, I guess, in this, it's going to be sometime maybe in March, I suppose, or maybe even later before the Court of Appeals hands down a decision?
Yeah, I never speculate on how long the commission or a court may take to rule on something or what exactly the ruling might be. But again, you're looking at the filings in the case not being complete until mid-February. So there will be some time before a decision's made and before we get an opinion from the court. I do want to mention one thing, and that's really to give credit where it's due.
Mm-hmm.
There are five formal parties in this proceeding. We had five formal parties in the case before the commission, and there are still five formal parties in the Court of Appeals case. Obviously, two of those parties are Indiana American Water and the City of Lake Station. Another party, of course, is the OUCC, representing consumer interests. But this is also a case where the City of Crown Point and the Town of Schererville intervened. Both of those municipalities are wholesale customers of Indiana American Water. They appealed in the case, and well, they intervened in the case. And actually, the brief that we have filed with the Court of Appeals is a joint brief of the OUCC as well as Crown Point and Schererville. So I want to give credit where it's due.
Does it seem that in that case here, we're talking about Crown Point and Schererville joining in on the dispute, they're concerned, of course, because, as you say, they're wholesale customers of Indiana American, which, of course, means they're buying all the water for their communities from the utility. They figure they're not going to get any benefit to be sure that even if there is a sale here, that maybe the this piece of, I hesitate to call it a piece of equipment, but it's basically a water filtration plant that's supposed to be part of this deal that's not going to be used, at least that's what the utility company says is not going to be used. Or maybe if it has to be in a case of an emergency or something like that, that these other communities that are on the water system are not going to get any benefit out of it either, huh?
Yeah, and I'm always very careful about not speaking on behalf of other parties, and I certainly would not want to put any, you know, words in the mouths of Crown Point or Schererville.
Yeah.
But certainly, being wholesale customers, they have a strong interest, because anytime you talk about rates changing or going up for a utility, they'll go up for the retail customers, of course, but they also go up for the wholesale customers as well. And therefore, you do have a strong interest there.
Are we finding it, from your experience working with other utilities for the OUCC and seeing all the paperwork that they file here, when you have situations like this, when you've got a big water utility that turns out that there are communities that are affected one way or the other, I keep thinking about issues that even come up with the City of Hammond, for example. City of Hammond pulls its water directly out of Lake Michigan, but it is offering it up to other communities around it, the towns around Hammond, in many cases, now over in Illinois, are getting benefit of this water coming out from Lake Michigan through Hammond. So everybody's all concerned about how much they have to pay for either their wholesale or retail for their water.
Yeah, and I think another way we can look at this is from a statewide angle. As you know, Chris, Indiana American Water is the biggest investor-owned water utility in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
It has customers literally as far north as Lake Michigan and literally as far south as the Ohio River. In the last 2 or 3 years, Indiana American has received approval from the IURC to buy four municipal water utilities around the state. In addition to Lake Station, you have two communities in far southern Indiana near Louisville, and more recently they've had the acquisition of the Sheridan Water and Wastewater Utilities in central Indiana. Sheridan is a small community kind of on the outer fringe of the Indianapolis suburbs. When the case went through the commission with Indiana American purchasing Sheridan, we didn't see any red flags. In fact, if there were any yellow flags, I don't remember them or they weren't there. But the bottom line in Sheridan was we reached a settlement agreement on that acquisition, and that was approved by the commission. There were no appeals, and I believe that sale closed here very recently.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at each of these cases, each of these acquisitions on a case-by-case basis. You have to look at the facts that are unique to them. And keep in mind that obviously we have the appeal going with Lake Station, but the Sheridan case is an example of where an acquisition, you know, can be done very amicably. Again, the issue here is not the purchase of the utility or the acquisitions or the mergers. The issue here is what cost will be borne by the utility's customers.
Yeah, that's
and should they have to pay for an asset that they're not going to use.
Right. Well, also, speaking of utilities customers, let's bring up another topic that's related with Indiana American Water Company. They are looking for a big rate increase because they want to do some major infrastructure work around the state of Indiana, but here in Northwest Indiana, too. Anthony, what seems to be the status from the OUCC's point on how that request is coming along?
The rate case with Indiana American Water is a completely separate docket from the Lake Station acquisition. So
right.
I just want to draw a very clear line distinguishing that.
Yeah, we're just talking about the same utility, but two different cases entirely. Yes,
exactly. As far as the rate case goes, the case is still pending before the Regulatory Commission. The utility has asked for a $38.8 million a year increase. That's an increase of about 17% over its current revenues. The OUCC filed testimony in late December recommending denial of that increase. In fact, our analysis based on the information we have right now shows that about a 7% decrease would be appropriate, or about $16 million. Again, that's based on the information and the evidence that we have right now, and we've made that recommendation to the commission. There are a lot of steps remaining in the rate case. Indiana American has the chance to file rebuttal testimony later this month. There'll be an evidentiary hearing in Indianapolis starting in mid-February, and then there'll be additional filings by the parties after that hearing. So we're probably looking into the late spring, maybe early summer, before there's a final decision in that case. But in the right case, right now, we're recommending denial of the request. And that's based on about a three-month review that was done by our attorneys, our accountants, our economists, and our engineers.
Well, Anthony, thank you very much for not only the update here on the rate case that Indiana American's putting forth here that everybody's considering, which will have an impact on everybody that has water service through the Indiana American Water Company, but also, too, about the situation with the City of Lake Station's attempt to sell its water plant to the utility, too. Thanks for being with us to talk about it today.
Thank you, Chris.
Anthony Swinger is a spokesperson for the Indiana Office of Utility Consumer Counselor.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.